Welcome back, Hour 2, going up to Golden, Colorado to talk about a golden author, a writer. Frosty Wooldridge comes to mind very quickly. Hello, my friend. How are you up there?
Well, hello, Jeff, and greetings from 8,000 feet under blue skies and Colorado sunshine. It's always a pleasure. I look forward to our times together.
Yeah.
And it's springtime, just burst out, I think yesterday was the first day of spring, and so, it's quite beautiful. The elk are starting to eat the green shoots that are coming up, and daffodils are already starting to bloom, so, it's pretty fun.
Do the elk come into your yard, or you're that close to them?
Oh, yeah. We have a small stream that goes right. I got a half acre in back of the house, and we're on the side of a mountain, so the house is literally a third of the house is literally inside the mountain. They had to cut away the mountain and then pour the concrete and create the house, and I got a big back deck.
Carved out your pad right from the mountain.
Yeah. And so anyway, because it is springtime, I've got two different themes that I want to go after.
First one.
So let's kind of pursue that, and then we can get to the more serious one. But I think in all of our lives, I think it's important that we take in each day with a sense of hope and renewal and appreciation, and so I wrote a piece. And it's already up on rinse.com in my category, but it's the title is Discovering the Meaning of Life. What is it? And you can go back, whether it's Socrates or Plato, or you can go back to Viktor Frankl, who was in Auschwitz during World War II. You can look at John Muir. You can look at Elizabeth Gilbert, you can look at Nellie Bly, you can look at all of these different famous people who made contributions to the human race, essentially. And so often, many, many people not only go to church, but also, question what's happening in the world. Certainly, they even question God. They certainly question some of the leaders of the different religions because of all the different confusing aspects of it. So I thought it would be worthwhile to try to figure out what is the meaning of life. And so...
Oh, you're going to try and do that in one half of 1 hour?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, that's quite a challenge. I look at every day as a blessing and a gift. And if people would just think about that, even if they don't act on, just think, put that thought in their head and do it over and over again, it'll start to manifest. Every day is a gift. Anyway, that's my take.
It really is. Every day is a gift. As a matter of fact, I have one individual who lives in Florida whom I've befriended over the years. And his name is Greg Roberti. And he he has written, he sends out a really nice daily appreciation for life. And it's really, really good because it inspires. And he even wrote a book. It was just published last year, The Legacy of Light. And in it, he's got all these incredible and beautiful quotes from people down through time, whether it's Gandhi, whether it's John Muir, Nellie Bly. You can go right on down the line, Diane Fossey, all of them, Jane Goodall. And so I think it's going to be fun for us to kind of look at that. So the one thing that our third president, Thomas Jefferson, said or wrote is that life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, which was in the Declaration of Independence, continues to ring true in my mind for all of my lifetime. I am thankful for the luck and the privilege of being a citizen of the United States of America, and that luck afforded me a life of personal choices and opportunities in whatever path I chose to live this amazing life journey that all Americans may choose for themselves, thankfully, at least so far in this, you know, this time period. And so as I keep growing and advancing in age, I ask myself, and I would ask everyone to ask your own self this, what have I done with my life? Was it meaningful? Did I accomplish anything of merit? Was I a kind person? Did I treat my wife well or my husband well? Did I honor my friends? Did I support my community? Did I make a difference in the lives of the people I touched? Did I make the most of my time during my life on this planet? You know, and here's the deal about time on the planet. It takes 60 minutes to make a minute. It takes 60 minutes to make an hour.
60 seconds to make a minute.
Now, excuse me, 60 seconds to make a minute. It takes 60 minutes to make an hour. It takes 24 hours to make a day, and it takes 365 days to make 1 year. You know, and what is ironic with the perspective of age is that time flies by faster than anyone ever imagined. And before you know it, those years pile up into a lifetime that's already passed. And you notice a lot of people, Jeff, get the 40th birthday. And that's when the adventure's halfway done. And then they have a life crisis at 40 because if they haven't done some of the things they wanted to do in their youth, now they're kind of locked into this advancing old age. And it rolls faster after 40. In fact, it even rolls faster after 50.
One of the dirtiest tricks is the concept of retirement. You work like a dog till you're 65, and then you retire. That's what it used to be anyhow. The time to retire is when you're young. That's what I did. I retired when I was going to the university, and years before and after that, I did as much as I could to make sure I got my full measure of life experiences then. That, to me, that was retirement. Retirement suggests people just sit back and do nothing and wait. That's not it. Now, a lot of them don't. I'm not saying everybody does. A lot of people do. They're very active. But traditional retirement, to me, has always been backwards. You're supposed to really expand and push the limits when you're young. You've been pushing the limits your whole life, so I, in a way, kind of think of you as in perpetual retirement. That's what retirement's supposed to be. You're really supposed to get out there and just knock it out of the park or whatever. Anyway, I'm just babbling.
Well, I would say that you and I are on the same stage, if you will, because, yes, I've had a ball my whole life, and that's with hard work. That's with easy work.
Very hard. That's what makes... That really is what makes life such a joy, when you work hard and you're able to change your surroundings to make them what you want. Creativity, vision. You have to have that. Most people don't. They just stare and they react now. It's very sad.
Well, it really is sad. And if you watch some of these TV programs that are going on, and they ask all these people down there on the beaches of Florida, which I used to go down to the beaches of Florida, and I used to go scuba diving there because I lived in South Georgia, and I could go all over. I had an old car, and I could put 4 72-inch cubic inch scuba tanks in and just head south, go to John Penney Camp Park off the Florida Keys and dive. My brother and I would just dive our brains out, and we got to see the wonder, under the water.
Uh-huh,
and since that time, I've scuba dived all over the world. I've scuba dived in the Atlantic, the Pacific, the Gulf of Mexico, the Mediterranean Sea, and the Indian Ocean around Australia. Dove into the Galapagos Islands. So, yeah, it's been a grand journey. And of course, I did find a way to make a lot of money fast and then take off for 8 months every year. And that was the United Van Lines truck driving job that I did every summer for all those years, almost three decades.
You must have worked your tail off. That's
work. United Van Lines and moving furniture is one of the most brutal jobs out there. I mean, it's brutal because you're putting in 80, 90, 100 hours a week. Of course, nowadays they have electronic logs, so you can't fudge the logs anymore. But when I was, I put the hours in, but I rolled the tonnage and I rolled the miles, and that's how you get paid, and I did very well. And that beat out my teaching job, obviously. So I got to live a lot of things, but, there's a lot of jobs out there. And for those of you who are inspired to live a life of adventure, my website is howtolivealifeofadventure.com, and one of the books that I would highly recommend for those of you who want to escape the drudgery of a cubicle or the drudgery of a redundant job, my book, Living Your Spectacular Life. It shows you how to find your dream, how to chase your dream, how to catch your dream, and how to live your dream. And it has 12 concepts and practices, and it's a really inspirational book. And every time somebody writes me, and they do, I get dozens of letters from people who read my books, and they're thanking me for a roadmap, if you will. And it's the roadmap that I created for myself. And I think I might have said this before, I had friends of mine say, Frosty, you've been living such a spectacular life. Well, why don't you write a book and show the rest of us how to do it? And I said, well, I can do that. And not only is that book inspirational, but it's an educational book that shows you how to do that. And it even shows, I think of about 20 people in the back part of the book who actually got out of the cubicle and they chased their dream and they discovered their dream and they chased their dream and they caught their dream and they're living it. And you can too. Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. And so in this discovering the meaning of your life, the key here, and I think it was Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the Starship Enterprise, and he and Riker were going through a ship that had crashed, and he said, and I'm quoting, "Someone once told me that time stalks us all our lives. I'd rather believe that time is a companion that goes with us on a journey. It reminds us to cherish each moment, because it will never come again. What we leave behind is not as important as how we have lived," unquote. Now, I have that quote above my corkboard, and I'd read it literally almost daily because
I
cherish...
That's a remarkable way to view time. I like that. That was very good.
It really is. And here's what you do. You get inspired by those writers, whether it's, whether it's Jack London or whether it's a John Muir or a Nellie Bly, or Elizabeth Gilbert. I mean, these are the people that inspire me, and I take their quotes seriously, and I read their books because I want to do what they do, and I wanted to do what they did, and because they guided me, I want to share the same guidance, and I'm always freely recommending those books from John Muir or Marcus Aurelius, the great Roman, or Epictetus, which was a philosopher. He was a Roman a philosopher. And so here's Jean-Luc Picard, and of course that was the captain of the Starship Enterprise, and somebody wrote those words and he said them, and it made an impact on me. So when I think of my youth, I'm thankful for the luck of having good, solid, loving parents. I had a great mom and dad. I mean, that's a big start in life. And while we were strictly lower middle class, I always enjoyed a roof over my head, a bed, toilet, shower, and food on the table. And I attended average schools, and I played many sports, and I delivered newspapers every morning, 7 days a week, 5 o'clock to 7 o'clock, from age 12 all the way to 18.
You did Dad it and Mom, for 6 years? Newspapers? Yeah. That's a tough row to hold.
80 customers during the week, 6 days a week. And then I'd have 100, I had 120 on Sundays.
And those, each one of the Sunday papers weighed at least a pound.
Oh, yeah, those Sunday papers. Yeah, I had to come back and reload. I had front baskets, I had rear baskets, and then I had two bags on both sides of me. But, you know, I got it done, and I always had a jingle in my pocket. And so I was thankful for that, because if you have good parents and you have a chance and you have good... The one thing my dad always gave me, and I'm always thankful for it, is he gave me confidence in myself. He would, if I was facing something hard to do, or an academic situation, or a bully at school, my dad said, "Son," and he put his arms around my shoulders, and he just say, "Son, if anybody can do that, you can do it." And that is how I have lived my life. I can do it. You know, and it's that confidence that my father, and certainly my mother, gave me, that made all the difference in the world, because I've been told that I can't do a few things in life, and I could tell you a few stories.
Yeah,
so anyway, tragedy did... Pardon?
That would probably make you angry to have somebody tell you that.
Give you a quick one.
Unless you're physically limited. Limited, and you can't run a 9500, okay. But everything else is on the table. It's your choice. Life is a banquet. You choose what you want to pursue, and you go after it. Don't expect anybody to hand you anything. Don't wait for the knock on the door. And for goodness sakes, don't be a victim, okay? Accountability. If you mess up, it's on you. Learn from it. Don't do it again. But these kids now, many of them, they're victims. And it's just awful. Victimhood. That's what this culture is turning into for too many people. Go ahead.
Well, for a quick story on that, my 10th grade teacher, her name was Mrs. Barbara Rainwater, and we were in history, and she was teaching history, and I'm sitting there in class, and there's the Wall of China, because it was a whole history lesson on China and India and all of Asia. And I saw the Wall of China, and I just said, "Mrs. Rainwater, this is the Wall of China." She says, "Yeah." She says, "You know something? I'm going to walk on the Wall of China someday." And she said, she's Southern draw, "Frosty, you're never going to walk on the Wall of China. The country is closed off to anybody else, and you will not be able to do that, my dear." I said, "Yeah, but my dad said that things changed, and someday I'm going to walk on the Wall of China." Well, it wasn't until 1984 and China opened up, and after the trucking season was over in September, I got a ticket to around the world, one of my three trips around the world. I got a one-way ticket around the world. It cost me $2,000, and I had 8 months before trucking season started the next June. And so I got a 21-day ticket all through China. I got to go to Kulin, Hangzhou, the Summer Palace, all of the tombs. I got to go to Kulin, you name it. It was incredible. And you name it, it was just an extraordinary experience. And as I got up to the Wall of China, I actually rented a bicycle, and I rode my bicycle up to the Wall of China. And then I had a bunch of kids, and they were selling T-shirts for it was like 50 cents. And I bought a T-shirt, the Great Wall of China. And sure enough, I got on the Wall of China, and I walked on the Wall of China. I got pictures of myself on the Wall of China. And when I got back to Hong Kong, I had Mrs. Rainwater's address. Uh-huh. And I took a picture. I had it made, and I sent it to her. And so I know she got it. So it was a couple of years later. It was 86. I did a coast-to-coast bicycle ride across America from San Francisco all the way to Jekyll Island, Georgia. And so I went right through Albany, Georgia, where I graduated from high school. And anyway, my mom was still living there, and I I got hit with a big TV crew at the edge of town, along with the newspaper, and they gave me a half hour interview. And here is the visiting son of at the Doherty High School there in Albany, Georgia, has returned triumphant, rode across America, rode around the world. And anyway, the next morning, Saturday morning, I get a phone call. And then I saw the paper, the Albany Herald, and it was a half-page spread. I mean, it was incredible. And I was on TV the night before. And the ring-a-ding-ding on the phone, and I said, hello, this is Woldridge Residence. Is this Frosty Woldridge? Yes, ma'am. Well, this is your old history teacher, Barbara Rainwater. And I said, well, how do you do, ma'am? I said, I got your beautiful picture of you walking on the wall of China, and I just want to say I'm so proud of you. And she says, you've been living an interesting life. You know, when you were in my class, I never thought you'd amount to much of anything.
How funny.
Oh, it was so funny. And I said, well, thank you, Mrs. Rainwater. I'm thrilled that you got the picture. And it just goes to show you, if you put your mind to it, you can certainly walk on the wall of China. And I hope everyone takes that little story to heart, because if you have a dream and you have determination and you want to work hard, And again, it's in my book, Living Your Spectacular Life. And I've given a program to high schools all over Colorado here. And kids come up and they say, this has been the best. And I give a slideshow, too. I take them all the way to Antarctica. And so they come up and they say, this is the best hour of my entire high school career. You showed me what I want to do with my life. You showed me how to find it. You showed me how to get there. And I one time, it was like 3 years later, I went to Golden High School, and these kids... Well, it was 3 or 4 years later, and these kids came up and they said, you know, one of the people that was in our class did what you told him. He worked two jobs, 80 hours a week. He rode a bicycle in public transport. He saved up over $100,000+. This kid did, and he bought a 7-gallon tank touring BMW motorcycle up in Anchorage, Alaska. And anyway, he flew up there when he quit all of his jobs, and he rode the bike up to the Arctic Ocean on the Dalton Highway, which I've done on a bicycle. He pointed that bike south, and he rode the Transamerica all the way, 18,000 miles, all the way to the bottom of South America, which I did on a bicycle, but no big deal. He did that on a motorcycle. I said, oh, my gosh, you know, and this was incredible. And I said, well, what's he doing now? Well, he's on social media. His name was Jack somebody. And he said he's over in Romania right now on his motorcycle. He's literally touring around the world, and we keep up with him. And so... you can live your dreams. You can gain that understanding. You can gain that determination. And if you want to be a traveler, it's one of the grandest educational experiences of your life. So anyway, those are two stories that show you that you could actually live your dreams.
Oh, sure. Limitations are usually self-imposed. And if you can get to the point of being able to see that, you can tear those limitations down.
Right.
And then you'll have a clear road ahead of you. You can do what you want. It's true. Frosty is the greatest example of that I've ever known. Ever. He's been a friend for a long time, and he has inspired me many times, even though I haven't done what he's done. I never grew up with limitations in my head. I knew I could do anything, unless I was physically prevented from doing it somehow. I didn't have the physiology to do it. I just knew anything else was there if I wanted to work for it. I just had that on my own. I didn't have a family. I've been on my own financially since I was 11. But I just knew there was nothing going to get in my way if I wanted to do something. And it's, you know, the same thing. And many of you listening are, thanks to Frosty, I'm sure, of the same mind. And it really is true. The limitations you face are usually your own. And that's not necessary. Let's put it that way.
Well, it really isn't. And one of the things I tell these auditoriums full of kids when I give the program, I just say, and if you don't have a dad and mom that were loving and gave you the confidence and the appreciation of your life and gave you all the tools you needed to go out there into the world, then just use my dad. Make my dad you know, your dad, and just pretend that he puts his arms around your shoulder. And I'll pull the kid out of the audience, and I'll just say, here's my arm around your shoulder. Well, just think, that's my dad, and that's he's got his arm around your shoulder. Or anyone you would like to have as a mentor, and you can go out there, and you can accomplish anything you want, and just take that confidence with you. So anyway, going back to this, so I will say this. Tragedy did devastate my youth when my father died at the age of 46. When I was just 17. His death wrecked my emotions. It wrecked my mind and my spirit and my understanding of life. I questioned God and life and my part in it. And Dad's death took the wind out of my sails, and it staggered me. And I can honestly say that his death changed my personality from high-spirited to a sobering and unique understanding that life is fleeting. And yet, his guidance, along with my mother, who carried us onward, still guides me to this day. The pure goodness and tenacity of my father dwells in me for my entire lifetime. So, whenever I faced a problem, and I'm saying this again, he would put his arm around my shoulders. Son, if anybody can do this, you can do it. You're going to make a difference in the world, unquote. That was my dad.
And
I'm so thankful for that. You know, it's so powerful. So anyway, that stuck with me my whole life as a student and as an athlete, as a math science teacher, as a cardiac medical technician, as an Army lieutenant, Medical Service Corps, as a college environmental science lecturer, as a United Van Lines truck driver, as a volunteer ski instructor for the disabled, as a husband, as a friend, and as a stepfather. Dad's guidance and confidence allowed me to continue my quest to become a writer and an author. And I'll never forget one of the customers that I moved from Detroit to Tampa, Florida, said when I finished the job, Frosty, thank you for doing a great job with our move, but you just don't seem to be a truck driver. What actually drives you? The guy asked me. And I said, you're right. I'm a writer, temporarily driving a truck so I can pursue my dreams of world travel and become a published author. And then he replied, I could see something different in your eyes, and now I know. So my question is to each of you listening to this broadcast tonight, and I hope this is a meaningful, something that will touch you. What about you? What about your life? What about your hopes and dreams? What about your path toward you gaining a meaning for your life? Because I can tell you this, you don't get a mulligan. Each day that you live is one day less that you get to live. And are you having a good time? Are you tapping into the wellsprings of your creative talents? What makes your life worth getting up in the morning for? Are you sitting in front of the TV set 4.1 hours daily like most Americans? Ask yourself some of these questions, and ask if are you living a life that you feel is worthy of your brain, of your skills, of your spirit, of your talent, of your educational level? Because in the end, it's all up to you. And so Henry David Thoreau, whom I also have this same quote, he said, and I'm quoting, if you advance confidently towards your dreams and endeavor to live the life which you have imagined, you will meet with success unexpected in common hours. You will pass through invisible boundaries. You will engage in new and liberal laws, and you will live with the license of a higher order of beings, unquote. I share that with you because it puts me into a very open and expectant and renewed sense of life every day. And the reason I read these quotes on my corkboard is because they chime with my spirit. They vibrate with my vibrations as a human being. And you can get different quotes. I think it's Wayne Dyer. He's got a lot of quotes out there. You might be your preacher or might be your priest. It's whomever inspires you, whichever books you read, you can really gain by reading those quotes and keep self-talk, if you will. You want to follow into that meaningful life. So Henry David Thoreau's words stare at me on my office corkboard for the last 40, 50 years now. I've discovered that if I maintain positive energy toward my daily life, then life feeds that energy back to me. And in that line of flourishing your mind, such energies speak to your soul, they speak to your spirit, and carry you onward toward your own destiny and toward living a meaningful life. That, I think, is one of my best paragraphs, because it makes me feel like, yes, I'm really in that groove. I'm in that creative path. And this Roman philosopher Epictetus said, and I'm quoting, "Tentative efforts lead to tentative outcomes. Therefore, give yourself fully to your endeavors. Decide to construct your character through excellent actions and determine to pay the price of a worthy goal. The trials you encounter will introduce you to your strengths. Remain steadfast, and one day you will build something that endures, something worthy of your potential," unquote. I mean, does that vibrate with you, Jeff? I mean, doesn't it just grab you?
Oh, yeah, sure. The saddest thing I think I've witnessed is how many people sell themselves short and consign themselves to a truly boring existence. I'm not saying everyone can duplicate what you've done, but they can certainly look at the world differently than they do. Most of them look at it, it's kind of, these younger people, I hear sometimes them talking and they're hopeless. They don't have any goals. Nothing is really exciting them every day when they get up. They're just going through the motions. And these are 20-year-old kids.
No.
There's nothing there. And I don't know how to get through to them. When they live in a world of digital electronics and screen addiction, how do you get through to them? I don't know. Maybe listening to you. And if you want to read something phenomenal, just get a Frosty Wooldridge book, and you'll get on the road with him. You'll be there. It's really fun.
Really is fun. At the same time, I always, in my book, Living Your Spectacular Life, or any of my other books, what I do is promote you toward your most beneficial path. You may want to be a macrame artist, or you may want to be a potter. You may want to be a games creator.
Frosty?
Yeah.
Simple. You're saying is so true. Find something that you love to do and do it to the absolute best of your ability. And you will be rewarded limitlessly. There's no end to it. You just do that, no matter what it is. Macrame, pottery, as Frosty said. Whatever it is, find something you love to do. Find your passion and do it.
That's exactly correct. Okay, and so to give you an example as to how the Epictetus inspired me, it took me hundreds of rejection slips from my first 8 book manuscripts, okay?
Literally hundreds? Hundreds?
Yeah, oh, hundreds. Oh, yeah. Hundreds of rejection slips.
Uh-huh.
And it took me, and this is no kidding, from the first book I ever wrote was a children's book. I actually wrote all these children's books. It took 22 years before a publisher accepted one of my books. 22 years. And had I given up, I would not be the author of 17 published books right now and 2 more coming out this year. And what I've shown my dad, that his guidance paved the way for my tenacious literary journey. And I'm really proud of that. And any of you can go to howtolivealifeofadventure.com, and you'll see all those books on the book tab. And each one of them is different. I'm a dilettante writer. I go from a novel like Strike Three, Take Your Base, to a motorcycle adventure to Alaska, to old men bicycling across America, to living your spectacular life, to America's overpopulation predicament, blindsiding future generations, to losing your best friend, because everybody listening to this program, you either have lost one of your best friends, or you've lost a best friend, or you're going to lose a best friend, or you're going to go through a divorce. You're going to go through some of those pains that is, declared about part of life, And so, mind you, it's not important that you become a New York Times best-selling author, or an artist like Rembrandt, or one of the Beatles, or Taylor Swift, or Dolly Parton, or Shania Twain, or Karen Carpenter. What's important, it's not even important that you become a football star or a tennis star or LeBron James or Simone Biles. That's not important. What's important is that you satisfy the urge within you, whatever it may be. And that urge, when it drives you and it turns you on, you may have to do a boring job, you know, each day. I mean, I had to truck, you know, 90, 100 hours a week to get to do the travel that I wanted to do, because traveling just turns me on. I mean, last summer, for me to sit on my motorcycle and walk into Jack London's cabin last summer was one of the highlights of my life. Yeah. And it was just 100 square feet, but he wrote all of his books up there. And that was the 1896-97 or 97-98, you know, gold rush. I mean, it was a time of incredible adventure.
You're talking
by all
about
these characters.
A 10 by, Frosty, you're talking about a 10 by 10, 10
yeah.
by 10 room.
10 by 10.
That's it. That's
yeah, I sat in the chair that he sat in.
Wow.
Yeah, all he had was a bed. He had a table where he wrote.
Desk,
he had a chair, and he had a potbelly stove.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And a stove.
Yeah. I mean, how exciting. And so then I get, and my brother Rex and I and our other two buddies, we get on the bikes. We get on the, go across the Yukon River on a ferry. We ride the top of the World Highway. If anybody ever gets to ride the top of the World Highway, you are on top of the world. You're up there on the Arctic Circle, for heaven's sakes.
Right.
And we went down the road for about 20 minutes, and what's in front of us? 400 caribou walking across the road in front of us, not even 30 feet away. They didn't even care that we were there. We turned the bikes off, and 400 caribou, it took them 20 minutes, 25 minutes to cross in front of us, doing what they did. I mean, how do you beat that?
kind of speechless when you come across something like that. You just sit and take it in.
Oh, you just take it in, and you can smell them, and you can hear them, and they're bleeding, and they're doing bleeding, bleating, and they got the calves with them, the young calves. Oh my gosh, how many Americans have ever seen a grizzly bear up in the wild? Well, I have. We saw 6 grizzly bear. I mean, wow.
And they
I mean,
can
that's
outrun,
a wow.
They can outrun any human.
A deer. Oh, yeah. For 100 yards, they can outrun a deer. Yeah. That's how they can get anything they want. So in the end, what's important is that you use your time on this planet to bring out the best in yourself. Live each day with zest and joy and energy and positive thoughts. You know, write a poem. Sing a song. Write a play, volunteer at your local food bank, take a walk in the woods, meditate, say a kind word to a cashier at the grocery store checkout stand like, oh, your earrings are beautiful. You will bring a smile to that person's life. Eat a chocolate chip cookie, for heaven's sakes, or maybe a half dozen. You know, and here's one of the things I think is important about this, is that Viktor Frankl was in Auschwitz, and he said, and I'm quoting, "Man and woman do not simply exist, but always decide what their existence will be, what he or she will become the next moment. By the same token, every human being has the freedom to change at any instant," unquote. That's so true. You could read that book that fires you up to be the greatest potter that ever lived, or you get to be a jewelry maker, or you get to be an artist, or you get to be a games player, you get to be a flautist, or you could be a guitar player, you could write songs. There's so many ways to, you know, and the one book that I really have, I always encourage everybody, it's called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear by Elizabeth Gilbert. I've read the book 40 times, and I bet you nobody's read a book 40 times. And I read it on the audiobook because it's that good. And it really renews your mind. It expands your mind. It creates such incredible creative thrust in you. So, yeah, Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. It's fabulous. And get the audio version so you can listen to it many times. And this, when you read a book, you bring your own biases. But when you hear it from the author herself, then by gosh, you are going to have a fantastic experience with Big Magic yourself. So finally, Viktor Frankl said there were 3 paths to finding the meaning in life, and I thought they were, and I researched all this. Number one, through creative options, doing something creative. Number two, experimental encounters, experiencing beauty and truth, goodness, nature, culture, or loving another person. Number three, additional or attitudinal choices. Attitudinal choices, how to respond to unavoidable suffering such as a loved one's death. And, of course, that's about my dad. And here's what the preacher said at my dad's funeral. Quote, in his passing, it may be difficult to find the grit to regroup and advance. But in sons and daughters and friends, Howard Wooldridge left the hardcore of aggressiveness and the will to win. The human body lasts less than a century. A man's achievements, good and bad, endure to infinity. This, then, is the end result of fatherhood and friendship and memories that survive the ages. In the eyes of the people who knew him, he shall remain a man of limitless courage, iron determination, and a monumental sense of humor and compassion. Unquote.
Wow.
That was my dad.
Wow.
That was my dad. As a matter of fact, I have that. I have all that right in front of me. It's literally the obituary of my dad, and it was in the paper, and it's 61 years old this year. My father passed away 61 years ago, and I wrote a book about it, Strike Three, Take Your Base, and it's a powerful book, and someday maybe I'm still pushing to make it into a Netflix movie, because there's 15 million of us out there that lost our father in our early teen years or younger, and the trauma and the tragedy and the impact never goes away. Never, ever goes away. You deal with it, you move through it, and you do the best you can. Some people do okay, some don't. But again, it's a moment in time that will, it
changes
your life.
Your soul. No, you can't.
Yeah, you can't. It goes into your soul.
No.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's
okay,
because that's your dad. No, wait. That's your dad being with you. That's how he's always with you. Okay?
Yeah, he is.
I think that's the way to look at it. Yeah.
Oh, I do. Well, and I have my dad's picture in my wallet. Every time I put my wallet out, I see my dad. I walk in, there's 8x10 of my dad on my
beyond words, Frosty.
Yeah.
I know.
My mom and dad are proud of very, very proud. I've never embarrassed my dad. I've never hurt anybody, never cheated anybody. I got into the medical service corps instead of infantry, so I wouldn't shoot anybody back during the Vietnam War. So I'm thankful for that. So here's a quote, and it's by yours truly. Quote, the adventure of life offers every human being the ability to live the moment of his or her most passionate idea, fantasy, or pursuit. It may take form in the arts, acting, sports, travel, or other creative endeavors. Once engaged, a person enjoys Satori, that's Satori, or the perfect moment. That instant may last seconds or a lifetime. The key to adventure, whether it involves painting, dancing, sports, or travel, throw yourself into it with rambunctious enthusiasm and zealous energy, which leads toward uncommon passion for living. By following that path, you will attract an amazing life that will imbue your spirit and fulfill your destiny as defined by you alone. In the end, you will savor the sweet taste of life pursuing goals that make you happy, rewarded, and complete. As a bonus, you may share your life experiences with other bold and uncommon human beings that laugh at life, compare themselves with no one, and enjoy a whale of a ride. Unquote.
Yep. I was trying to think that there's not one thing that I can ever remember you saying that is not worth remembering and reciting, occasionally revisiting it. These are very important guidestones on how to make your way down this path, which can often be very difficult for people. And I don't mean to say that everyone necessarily has the tools to do the kinds of things that Frosty does, but potentially they do. But in reality, it's different. The idea is mentally to set yourself up to embrace those values and those dreams. If you can do that and let those things become part of your mind and your consciousness, your soul, you have liberated yourself from a lot of grief. Most people, unfortunately, go down with grief. They just don't know how to get rid of it. And I mean grief of all kinds. Can't pay the rent grief. Losing a girlfriend or a boyfriend grief. Failing at school grief. Well, you know, nobody fails at school if you have a brain, unless you want to. You have to want to fail to fail, unless you're deaf, dumb, and blind. And even then, people like that have achieved great things. Helen Keller. Anyway, yes, you've inspired a lot of people. And so I'll talk about a lasting gift to the world. There it is, and you've done it.
So, well, thank you.
And
so,
welcome.
In the end, the last question of the entire essay is, what is the meaning of life? And I say this with all sincerity. It's all right there in the palm of your mind.
There you go.
I want you to hear that again. What is the meaning of life? It's all right there in the palm of your mind. You know, you always say, well, it's right there in the palm of your hand. In this case, the meaning of life is in the palm of your mind. And you can take, there's inspirational books out there. Some will vibrate with your vibrations, and you can really do them. Also, before we end our evening together on a very positive note, I'm still writing a book, and I've been writing it for, almost 10 years now. When Your Father Died Too Soon, I'm still looking for another 10, 15 chapters for anyone whose parent, their father, just their father, because I could only deal with the father. Their father died somewhere between the age of 8 and 18. If you have a story that you want to write, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 words, I'll give you an entire chapter. And what I want you to do is send me an email, frostyw@juno.com. That's J like Jack, juno.com. frostyw@juno.com. And I'll send you a two-page how-to. And I'll edit the whole thing, but you can put all of your pain, or you can put all of your excitement, or all your inspiration, or you could even put your anger at your father. One of the writers, he was so angry at the U.S. government because the military got his father killed off in Iraq, and he hates the U.S. government, and he put it very powerfully in, and he felt so much better about it, and you'll find that it could be a very cathartic experience. And you'll be in a book that's going to help probably 15 million other souls out there that went through this trauma and this tragedy that will be with you for the rest of your life. And please know that I'm one of you. I'm one of the ones that lost his father at that early age. And boy, did it do a number on me. And yet at the same time, I recovered. You can recover. And it's a tremendous experience to be able to share it with others, and then they may be helped by your story, because all these different stories that I've gotten in this book. One lady, she watched her father die of cancer when she was 13, and he just wasted away. And to this day, he used to take her backpacking and skiing, and to this day, she goes backpacking and skiing so she can feel close to her father. And I've read her chapter at least a half dozen times, and each time I just cry my eyes out because I know what she went through. Because I sit on a ski lift some of my winters, and I feel my dad's right next to me on that ski lift, or I'm taking a bike ride, and my dad is either in front of me or in back of me in my imagination, and what a joy it is to ride with my dad, if only in my mind. And so, anyway, this book, I don't know if it's going to publish this year, but it's going to publish either late this year or early next year. But I would love your story, if you have one, or you have a friend, or you have a parent. It would enrich the book so much. And like I say, you'll have a full chapter. And even if you're not a great writer, just put your feelings down, and I explain it. I'll just email me, and I'll send you back an email with a two-page explanation on it. And then I ask you, and we did this 2 years ago, I wrote a letter, a Christmas letter to my dad. You remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. I wrote that letter to my dad thanking him because he was there with me in the South Pole. He was there on the Wall of China. He scuba dived in the Galapagos Islands with me. Why? Because he's always in my mind. I take him everywhere with me. And I take my mother, too, because I'm so thankful that I had such, you know, really decent, good, kind parents that not only took care of me in my youth, but they inspired me and gave me the security and the sense of self-appreciation and self-confidence. And I think anyone who writes for this book, you'll do the same for those readers out there.
What a nice thing to do.
And
you don't have to be a polished writer. Frosty will help. He'll edit your material for you. Nobody needs to know. He just wants the experience.
And you can use your name, or you don't need to use your name. I'll keep you out of it. You'll be anonymous, or I'll put your name there. You know, whatever you like, you'll be remain private, but you will do a lot of good for a lot of people, because there are 15 million of us out there who had this trauma happen to us in our young lives.
Understood. Frosty W at Juno. JUNO.com.
That's correct.
So just write to Frosty. All right, if you want to contribute, it'd be great. It'll be something you'll never forget. It'll really make you feel good.
It will.
I can tell you that. All right, my friend, thank you. That was a very inspiring, truly an honest hour of life and emotion. That's what this is all. That's what makes us different, emotion.
Yeah, it really is.
Thanks, Frosty. Thanks.
Okay, next time. God bless.
Alrighty. Good night.
Thank you, Joe. Good night.
Frosty W at Juno.com. All right. There's only one Frosty Wooldridge. He really did broke the mold with him. Okay, we're going to take a little break. Come right back with another hour for you. Thanks for being here. Hold on.